This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Oh, listen to that new music, Sean. Same cast of characters back for the American show for another season.
Brother, we're growing up. We're not listening to guitar anymore.
Oh,
we got classical. What is that technically?
Those
strings? Orchestra?
Those are strings. I'm a big strings guy, actually.
That's ported over from a 1950s Disney movie of some sort. I think it might have been Fantasia. I'm not sure.
Probably.
I think I heard that they play that at the Bellagio Fountains.
Oh, I love we're going to get to the Bellagio Fountains in Vegas in a second. This is the Tuesday edition, the All-American, your favorite, I know it is, listener, edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. I'm your host, co-host, you could even say, Craig Custance.
Star of the show.
And this is starring Sean Gentile. Great show. I mean, we're back. We're excited. We have a great leadoff guest. San Jose Sharks GM Mike Greer is going to join us in segment two. Does he have his work cut out.
Oh, man. We haven't recorded Mike yet. We're doing that after this segment.
I'm looking forward to it.
And I think I'm just going to go back and forth between asking him, like, ah, wow, Thomas Hertl, so nice, right? Great guy. And then being like, also, how are you going to do your job for the next 5 years?
Yeah, that's going to be the classic like compliment sandwich interview.
But boy, Thomas Hertl, great kid.
Great market. I love that. I love going to San Jose. That's going to be awesome when that team's good again. But
also, have you looked at your cap-friendly page?
But I wanted to start here. And like a bunch of news drops as we're recording. Every defenseman from, I would say, my era of covering the league at a national level has retired today. Zdeno Chara, Keith Yandel, PK Subban are some of our favorite people. Like memorable moments. So we're going to get to that in segment three.
Your era?
They all said, hey, let's get together. This is my era. Yeah. There was a stretch where I was, you know.
I mean, also retiring, Larry Robinson.
That's not my era.
Sir Savard.
No, how old am I? I did feel old reading your story yesterday about the emo and punk songs that you
A lot of those, brother, I hate to break it to you, a lot of those are old. We had people in the comments. First off, that was Arthur's idea, and Arthur is older than, and he's old. He's older than me, he's older than you. And there were Fugazi songs in there. Like Guy Picciotto from Fugazi is like, he's like 60. This wasn't targeted towards young people. All the 90% of those songs came out when you were in college.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like you close the at 22, you close the book on new music as a human. Everyone knows the rules. And then you just that's that. So like
maybe if you're a coward. I think I closed the book when I was about I made it farther. I was probably like 32.
Like that was targeted for, I would say, what, older millennials? That would be the target audience on that one. And you found it, by the way. Also, whoever runs the New York Times social media account must be an old millennial.
I'm pretty sure that got some run on the New York Times homepage yesterday, which, you know, I don't know if anybody was paying attention to the news. A little bit of a slow news day. Big story of the afternoon was the Queen of England's funeral. And if you looked at that and scrolled a little bit farther down, you would see me and Arthur and Charlie O'Connor trying to figure out which American football song applied to which team.
Yeah, it might have been your best work. It was Arthur's idea. I was wondering about that.
Can you believe it? I can.
Arthur's
an old punk.
Yeah.
And it worked. People loved it. It sold a bunch of subscriptions and got picked up by the New York Times.
Hey, people like fun things and creativity, but also insight a little bit. I don't know. There's some you had to work for it.
It wasn't that creative.
Come on. Sean, so we haven't talked since you got back from Vegas. Sean Gentile covered one of my three favorite events on the NHL circuit, and this is the car wash. And if you don't know the NHL car wash, this is where they bring typically the best player from each team. They try to. They're still or the most willing player.
Or the most available player. In some cases.
But, I mean, Sidney Crosby was there. Connor McDavid was there. Nathan MacKinnon was there. Mm-hmm. Kyle McCarr. Great. I mean, just usually an all-star lineup. And, you know, you set up shop and they're just, the players make their rounds. And what's fun about it is they're all generally in a good mood. Like, it's they're back from summer. They haven't seen us in a while, so they're not annoyed yet. In your case, they haven't seen people in the locker room in years, so there's probably some of that.
That was a big question. Some guys brought it up themselves. They're like, "Oh man, I haven't seen you guys in a while. This is nice. It means like, this is like the last step before things are going back to normal," which is like a thing that we heard multiple times.
Back like, to normal being like them being mad at you and wanting to go to the locker room.
Right? Yeah, I'm sure. Whenever it's March and the Winnipeg Jets, you know, have lost 7 of 11, and Mark Scheifele's getting hit in the head with cameras. It is Stahl. He'll definitely be equally psyched to talk to everybody as he was a few days ago.
No captain in Winnipeg, but we'll get to that too. Yeah. So what Nathan MacKinnon seemed to steal the show based on my followings from afar. What were your impressions?
With MacKinnon, I think there was some stuff. I think he was even better than the quotes kind of implied.
Yeah, okay.
That he was. And I'm trying to find like a diplomatic, like pod friendly way to say this. A lot of the interview was spent with him being like, "I'm not crazy. I swear, like people think I'm some kind of freak, but you know, I'm not."
And then he would go. So he was trying to convince you.
Yeah, but he was. And then he was also, it's not like he was also trying to convince himself. And then this happened twice. He would say something like that, and then he would immediately say something that just like completely invalidated like the first, like the premise of
the premise of him being pretty normal.
So, yeah. So he was like, and he brought up, I believe it was last year whenever, you know, someone finally asked about all the crazy rumors where he doesn't let his teammates eat, you know, he makes him eat cauliflower pasta or whatever, mm-hmm. all the weird nutritional stuff. I think that was at last year's car wash. He brings it up on his own. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, like everyone wants to talk about, you know, this, all the nutrition stuff. Like I'm policing, you know, guys in the locker room at their stalls. And like, that's really not the way it is. And I'm paraphrasing here lightly. Sure. And then he waited a tick and he was like, "But, you know, I just don't understand how guys can't, like, don't care about what they put in their body in, like, whatever." We're like, okay, like there we go.
Look, you do what you want, but...
Pretty much,
you're a millionaire athlete. You better eat cauliflower pasta.
That's basically what he said. He was like, you got to be careful about which sports drinks you put in your body, right? It's like BioSteel only. This podcast is not sponsored by BioSteel.
Yeah.
The other, we'll see what happens when it gets released.
The pinch.
Ugh, yuck. Tastes like trash. The other thing that he did, somebody asked, it was not me, about not winning a heart. Like, basically, like, do you care about that anymore? Like, when, like, I don't, it was a good question.
It's been a long time, by the way.
Like, I don't remember.
How long ago was that when he, like, he should have won it and didn't?
Yeah, that was basically, it was the year before. It was, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's happened a bunch of times. Yeah.
Right. That was the most egregious
thing. Same thing where he's like, you know, yeah, I'd like to win it, but it's not something I think about all that much anymore. You know, it is what it is. You can't control it. Then he waits a beat and he was like, but yeah, you know, like, oh, Jim from Philly doesn't have me in his top five, so I don't win one. Oh, that's great. Painful. That's what he said. So I got him rolling on that. And I was like, yeah. I don't think
Philly. Does he think like sports talk callers vote on that?
Yeah, right. And, you know, I was like, Nate, I don't think Jim from Philly is here. He was like, kind of Bob from Seattle. Like, well, like whatever it is. Yeah, those guys. I guess I need to play better for those guys, and then maybe I'll win a hard trophy. Like, the standards for that award change every year. Like, he started getting rolling, right. And he had to stop himself. Like, he was like, oh, whatever. Like, da, da, da. He had a bunch of good stuff about Gretzky and a bunch of good stuff about Crosby, and, you know, seemed lightened up enough to the point where he's willing to actually, you know, almost show a personality. Almost give you a glimpse. Like, there's something about the way that he talks and about the way that he answers questions. Mm-hmm. And it might not be necessarily what he says. And this is the level of granularity, I think, that we're working on here sometimes. Is like, talking to Nathan MacKinnon, it seems like you're talking to a real person.
Right.
Like, he gesticulates and his voice changes levels. And he's kind of demonstrative in a way that, frankly, a lot of those guys aren't. So he's fun to talk to, because to have an elite NHL player, a top of tier 1B player, if you're going to the tiers project, yeah, of course you aren't. You abandoned it. It's rare to find a player of that caliber who's actually kind of engaging and kind of honest and will give you something that is at least worth sharing with people. It doesn't happen all that often. So I think the combo of the player and the point in his career that he's at now, because he's won a cup, you can scratch that off the list. And the fact that we did catch him at the start of the season before stuff got really ugly. I think that combination led to some better answers. And that clearly was not the case for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of theories there. I mean, part of it's just personality. Nathan MacKinnon's always been personality. I wonder how much of it, he's in Denver, right? Like, he's not overwhelmed constantly. He hasn't been graded down by the media. Mm-hmm. I don't think. I mean,
yeah, deal he's with talking Peter to, Baugh. That's he's fun. Talking to, he's talking that? To Pete every day. Who wouldn't be in a good mood?
That would be awesome. You know, so there's that, and you're right. He's matured. He doesn't have to defer to anybody. He's won a cup. Like, he can now be himself. I did want to ask you about Connor McDavid, who's kind of, when you talk about people who are maybe more reserved, you know, Connor has been living under a microscope since he was 14, where everything he says is magnified times 1,000. So it's the opposite, right? Like, he was my fear with Connor is he's gone so far the other direction where he can't even. It just seems inhuman at times. That in a way, like, it just seems robotic. Like, he just is so worried about him being quoted. So, not to go like an unfun direction, but the Hockey Canada stuff came up, and it read to me pretty insensitive when coming. Oh, you know, just reading the transcripts.
It was, and I think maybe it didn't sound quite as bad as it read. I was there. I was at the table, and on some level, I mean, I blew it. We all should have followed up a little bit more, you know, strenuously on that. I don't want to turn this into like media navel gazing hour. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear me.
I mean, we are talking about a media access event.
Right. I mean, because what else? I mean, whatever. It just happened. It's fine. Right. Like. Nobody, I'm not trying to like martyr myself here or whatever, because I think that happens too often on stuff like this. I wish we would have pushed back harder on that, because it was such, and I think part of it is because we're just so trained to accept like non-answer answers that are theoretically pretty anodyne, right? That's everything Connor McDavid says. It's just like, whatever. It's like, he'll talk and it'll be, you know, somewhat relevant because he says it, but also it'll be devoid of content, really. Like there's nothing there. And right. he went into that mode on the Hockey Canada stuff. It was just like, yeah, this is a hard time for everybody, like, whatever. And it was, and I think we, I mean, I certainly just didn't, it didn't register with me as being as crappy an answer right. as it was, because people were pissed, and rightfully so, because that's, you know, and I think we run the, there are some things with hockey players where we run the risk of expecting too much from them. Like, we can't expect, like, I'm not expecting these guys to give, like, actually, you know, engaging political answers or be right, honest, sure. And, you know, be fun to BS with about, you know, whatever, Under the Banner of Heaven or whatever TV shows people like that. Like, that's tough, right? You can't be like, hey, I caught the show on FX. Like, let's talk about it. That's like on a lot, you know, in a lot of cases, that's not the level these guys are operating on. You're not expecting them to be engaging personalities. And I think too often, especially in the case of McDavid and especially in the case of this Hockey Canada stuff, we apply that to things of real importance. Like, we're okay getting garbage answers from Connor McDavid about getting pucks in deep and, you know, we got the power play and, you know, whatever else. So we give him a pass. I'm saying we very, in a very literal sense, as in like me a couple of days ago, you give him a pass to whenever he gives an actual trash answer for something like with the Hockey Canada stuff, which is just like, you keep, again, standards really low. You look at what Cale Makar said. It was perfect and fantastic and didn't ruffle any feathers and not like, you know, didn't, it was meaningful and insightful and sincere without putting himself in any kind of hot water. Even McKinnon had the same kind of line of answering, but added at the end just how it was just, how it made him sick and it was in this and that. He at least centered the victim, the accuser in a way that McDavid didn't. Because McDavid was like, yep, bad deal for everybody. Like, let's move on.
Right.
And I think we treated that in the moment like we were asking him a question about, you know, Mike Smith retiring or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not what he was. He doesn't have an obligation to be interesting. He doesn't have an obligation to tell us tactical stuff or give us any look at his internal life. Like, we, and I think we're trained to not expect that. That's fine. Like, there's no obligation there. And people, you know, you can criticize him on some level, but it doesn't raise the level of biffing on an answer that badly and also not being pushed back on it, which is something anybody who was face to face with him could have done. Cause it was garbage. It was junk. And we treated it like he was, you know, again, answering a post game question about whatever. And that's not the case.
Right.
The standard for that stuff for hockey players is really low. The standard for Connor McDavid is even lower, and he failed to meet it. And we kind of ushered him, you know, up to the door on that one.
Hmm. It's interesting because Sidney Crosby for years was, people were critical that he didn't, you know, he could be bland. And I think for many of the same reasons
Connor
McDavid is. But I think Sid has found a way to, he's more introspective. Sid thinks, like, absolutely. You ask him a question, he thinks about it almost through the, you can see it like processing through the lens of, I'm Sidney Crosby. So I still have to answer this carefully, but it's not always going to be just a completely bland answer.
And without going, I mean, whatever, we're reading into body language and stuff here. There's no way around it. But like, if you ask Sidney Crosby a tough question, you can tell that he's trying to formulate a thoughtful answer, and or at least you see the gears turning. Like, he knows that there's stuff he can't say, and he sort of flicks at maybe the bigger point. And very rarely, you know, there's a difference between being bland and being, you know, almost deliberately evasive, right? I think that Crosby is on the right side of that, certainly more so as he's gotten older. And there's just something about, maybe not, in some cases it's what he says, in some cases it's how he says it, it's what it looks like as he's saying it and whatever else. I don't see that with McDavid most of the time, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's there's a, you know, blankness there, I think that isn't present with Crosby.
Was there a guy, you know, Nathan, we kind of know Nathan McKinnon's personality. We've kind of gotten to know Cale Makar fairly quickly at a kind of a national level. The fun thing about these events is sometimes they bring up, like, you know,
Mark Philip Stone.
Deneau or Mark Stone. Or somebody who maybe you just haven't dealt with that you were like, that guy was great. Like,
you nailed both of them, actually.
Really? Who was it? That, it was
Mark Stone, deadpan, really funny. had some great digs at Kessel, had a really great line about Eichel. It's asked about Eichel. Probably wasn't even a line. It just seemed like it was him being honest.
Yeah.
Like Mark Stone's give a shit meter is way.
Yeah.
It's low. He's not worried.
Oh, he gets asked about. I love when people get to that point. Oh.
He gets asked about Eichel. About what it was like playing with Jack, or tough first year for Jack, or whatever the exact phrasing of it was. He goes, yeah, when he got here, I thought he was a bad guy. We're like, huh? Yeah, I figured he was going to be a bad guy. And we're like, oh, damn. It was like with the way stuff ended, like whatever. He thought that Eichel was a bad dude. And then Eichel shows up and works harder than anybody. And obviously shows him, doesn't think he's a bad guy now. But just to open a,
I thought that's
to
where open he just an answer ended with it that, like that, where he's just like, never had my mind changed. Or
I was kind of hoping there was like, here we are in year two. He's at least he's going to have a full season to change my mind. No, he prefaced it with that. He was just generally funny. And Philip Deneau, I had never spoken to him before. He was great. He was a total low talker. I was worried my mic wasn't going to pick up anything he was saying, but a super thoughtful dude. And seemed like he's gonna be a coach, he's gonna be in management or something if he wants it. He's got that. I think we can always tell. We're like, all right, that guy's a GM in 12 years or whatever it is, and he's certainly on that level. And Jonathan Huberdeau was great.
Oh, I liked his. What did he say about like Bill Zito? Did Brad for living a favor or something? There was some kind of money quote, right? Like, yeah. Oh wow. Okay.
Uh-huh. So, all right. So this is so in the weeds. So like, whatever. Hey, Huberdeau was the last.
We're already there.
We're there.
Welcome back. We've
disappeared into our own navels on this one. I think already.
People are looking for like the 3x speed button on their podcast right now. How can we get to the mic?
So Huberdeau's the last one of the day. He's the last guy today. There's this huge gap in between. Typically, these are like rapid fire, right?
Yeah.
They're 15 minutes. They bring another guy. 15 minutes. They bring in another guy. It's like once you talk to 6 hockey players for an hour and a half consecutively, like by the end you're sort of cooked, right?
Yeah.
There was no break. It's like, all right, here's Cam Atkinson, here's
like Quinn Hughes, dating, here's like almost
100%.
Yeah.
So there's this big gap in between Huberdeau and everyone's like, all right, it's like 2 hours, right? So everyone's like, all right, some folks left, some folks.
I was gonna say, I'm surprised he stuck it out. I might have been like,
me and Russo worked. We just like transcribed some stuff, and we're like, whatever, we're here. We're not gonna blow off Huberdeau, and I'm glad we didn't because he was awesome. The group was a little bit smaller, and he made our wait worth it. You know, he was like super thoughtful and super sincere, and like very clearly still kind of banged up from the trade, even though he's psyched for Calgary and he's ready. He's thrilled about the direction of the team and loved all the money he signed for, or whatever. Like, you're like, fine.
He's great.
Yeah. But Quinn Hughes had this line where he was talking about how excited he was how excited he was to see stuff fall apart for the Flames. Cause he's like, oh, you know, I think it's great, Johnny. And, you know, they look like Johnny walks and that they're going to have to trade Chucky. So like the arrow's going like whoop, and he did like the roller coaster down motion. And he's like, and then, you know, whatever, they trade for Huberdeau and they sign Nas and Uyghur and all this stuff. And then it goes back up. And like, so like Quinn was like,
Does he do sound effects with the arrows too?
He actually did. Yeah. He did like the gesture and the sound. I'm not kidding. Cause he liked us and doesn't like you personally.
I was going to ask about that.
The Quinn Hughes production tour has started. Someone brought that up about being like, well, you kind of had a roller coaster offseason. People thought they were going to suck. And then they pulled it together, like Brad Tree Living, you know, pulled it together. And Huberdeau was like, yep, you can thank Bill Zito for that one.
Come on.
Yep. And we're like, oh, shit. Okay. Mm. And then it was very good. He's a thoughtful dude. Heard good things about Huberdeau from Dranser. Thomas Drance, you know, covers the Canucks, but also was
a lot of Florida Canucks. Was
comms VP for the Panthers in a very recent past life. So he got to know Huberto well and was like, he had always said that he's a great dude. And I think we got to taste that. But it was a good couple of days. It's always a challenge. I think we regular listeners know, you know, we do our best to wring whatever we can out of this guy, out of these guys at times. And I got two full days of that.
Would it have been too much to ask for you to get a little bit of audio for the podcast so I could
sit we tried
in segment two? My goodness. You had a bunch of players brother dropped in your lap and you couldn't get some
do podcast you wanna, audio? Okay, let's see. We're like 25 jeez minutes in here. Do you want to just turn this into like the inside baseball media grievance tour.
Yeah, we're already going into the media stuff. That was and not, now it's Sean and Craig's planning sessions about
that was not going to happen. And we see 32 Thoughts, Elliot and Jeff have three different podcasts lined up with great audio one-on-ones from Crosby and whatever. That, folks, is the benefit of being an NHL rights holder.
Oh, we're not a rights
Sportsnet
holder.
Yeah, we don't broadcast we don't stream games on the website. So Sportsnet got guys in that capacity, and ESPN did, but there was zero chance that we were going to be able to get, you know, usable audio, let alone one-on-ones with any of those guys, really.
Hey, proudly independent since 2017. The Athletic. When
did we start? Is that 16? True? I don't know 18? If we're independent anymore.
We're independent. Who are we rights holders?
Producer Jeff says 2016.
2016. We are beholden to nobody.
Other than the interests of the New York Times company.
Well, of course. That goes without saying. All right. Let's. Great.
My favorite media outlet. I'll tell you that much. You know why?
Because they love their work. They pump up Sean Gentile so much.
That's right. It's me, Paul Krugman, Brett Stevens, great guys who we know and love.
I knew it would take them about 3 months to discover you over there, and now they're like, what has Sean written today?
You know what my next piece is going to be for the Athletic NHL vertical? I'm going to be complaining about debate on college campuses.
Well, can you tie that into the Florida Calgary trade? By the way, Bill Zito, I think, is our guest next week. So we will. Billy, be ready for a question about Huberto. Guys are going to be mad they got traded. I would be mad.
I think Bill is going to understand that the guys are going to be mad. He knows what he was doing. They were talking extension, and then he got traded to Calgary. Whatever. Bill's an agent for a zillion years. Yes. I think he realizes that at some point, you know, it's about business and it's not personal.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, San Jose Sharks GM Mike Greer. Looking forward to that one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
We are now thrilled to be joined by new San Jose Sharks GM, Mike Greer, who's had a busy summer. Mike, first of all, thanks for doing this and congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So I wanted to start, you jump into San Jose and immediately start making some changes, growing the staff. I think I saw somewhere from, overall from 29 to 35 in terms of player development and front office, really, immediately kind of leaving your mark. How much of that was part of your pitch going in and how, what went into the thought processes of going into right away kind of making these changes?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that was definitely that we discussed about in the interviews, and as I felt strongly about that there was areas of the organization that needed to be strengthened, player development being one of them. How the league is now, it's you need young players, you need to draft well, but you also need to develop your young players and need them to contribute. So, the staff was a little bit light here in the past. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to get Todd Marchant from the Ducks, who's been doing for 11 years for them. So that was a big get for us. And, you know, he's bought in Lucas Pisa, who had experience doing it, and Tommy Wingles, another Shark guy who's been really, really great with the kids this week. So, and we got Nicky Sundstrom over in Europe helping our guys out over there. So the staff has grown, and, you know, I just think it's such a big part of the game now that we needed to nail that. And then we needed to, like I said, you need to draft well and develop well. So, you know, we felt like, we needed to add to our, on the scouting side as well. So those were kind of two of the big departments that we felt we needed to kind of give a little bit of a boost to.
Well, Tommy Wingles and Lucas Pisa. Are you going to name any other players that you hired that it's going to make me feel extremely old to know that they're working in front offices now? My God, that is brutal.
Oh, I know. It's tough getting old. I see it every day. Some of these kids are coming in here and they look like they could be my kids, and they're walking around the ring playing. So
Tommy is such a personality. Just having somebody like that who is so, I don't know, like, I'm sure he makes these kids feel comfortable immediately. He's just one of the, like, was that part, you bring in somebody who not only knows the game and knows it well, but can connect with these players. I mean, you bring in these former players that aren't too far removed, right? Like, is that part of the strategy there?
Yeah, for sure. And he's got a good way about him. And yeah, he's also someone who had to earn everything he got. You know, he's not someone who walked in the league as a high pick. You know, he had went to school and had to kind of grind his way up through and work his way up into playing in the NHL. So I think he's got a good story, and he's got a good feel for kids and, you know, what they're going through. It's not easy on these kids today with, you know, that I think there's a lot of external pressure and social media and things that these kids are going through. So it's been really good to have someone who can relate to them and kind of make them put them at ease and just talk about life as well as hockey.
Hmm. You mentioned the interview process. Now you brought up some things, you know, where you felt like the org, you know, needed to beef up, but what about that job? What about the organization and the job appealed to you? Like what made it, I mean, other than being an NHL job, I mean, what, like, is there anything you focus on during the process where you're like, all right, this is a job I'm going to go after, like whole hog?
Well, I think one of the main things was that, you know, I really enjoyed playing here. You know, I had that connection to the city and the fans. Mm-hmm. You know, the fans here are great, even though there's been a couple lean years here now, but the fans here were great. I, you know, they treated me well and I really enjoyed it. And then the other thing that was appealing is to kind of have an opportunity to put your stamp on a franchise and try and build things up and do things the way that you see fit and would like to do. So I think those were kind of the two things that appealed most to me.
How much did you look at like the cap friendly balance sheet and go, boy, maybe there's somebody that has a cleaner books I can chip it to.
Yeah. I try not to look at that too much.
It's hard, yeah. But like, I mean, you got like the Brent Burns deal is like, that's a good example of saying, okay, we're turning the page here and there's deals to be made. And how was that process? Was that difficult with Brent and, you know, what was that like?
I mean, Brent was good. We had good talks from the moment I got the job, and he was, you know, he was pretty open about it. And I understood, being an ex-player, coming from his perspective, you know, as you get older, you kind of start to see the end of the line coming. And, you know, for him, he wanted to go somewhere where he had a chance to win a Stanley Cup in the next couple of years. And I was honest, we all want to win, but looking at our group and our roster where we are, we're not ready to compete for the Stanley Cup. So we had good talks, and it's never easy to move, you know, a defenseman who plays as well as he does and eats the minutes that he does and is good in the locker room. So that part of it was difficult, but, you know, I think you just have to be a little bit realistic as well as to where you are and with the money and the age of some of the players. I think we just have to kind of be realistic with that. And we tried to help Brent out as well. So it kind of, you know, worked out for both sides, hopefully.
How much did he zero in on Carolina as a potential destination? Was that like at the top of the list? Did he bring you guys a, like, you know, here's teams A through G of places I'd like to end up? Like, what was that end of the process like?
There was, you know, a handful of teams he was interested in going to. You know, Carolina was definitely near the top, and I think, they were interested as well. So, you know, Donnie was pretty into it right away, letting us know that he'd have interest if we were going to go down that route. So it just happened to work out.
When you were hired, you said, you know, you're the first Black NHL GM, and you said with that comes responsibility, and that's a hard enough job, just, you know, jumping in and all the work you have to dig in and do. What does that responsibility look like to you? I was curious if you could expand on that and what that means to you.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is just how you carry yourself, you know, who I'm surrounding myself with, who I'm hiring, and just trying to do a good job, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, hopefully I can do well enough and show owners and other teams in the league that, you know, minorities and can handle this position and are worthy of, you know, if they're the best candidate and they're qualified, that they're worthy of being able to handle this type of position. And it's, you know, it's not too much different than, you know, when I started off as a player and there wasn't too many Black players in the league. It's almost the same way, where you have to handle yourself a certain way, present yourself a certain way, and try and be successful to help kind of hopefully open the doors for others behind you. So it's kind of a similar situation.
You said your dad gave you advice. I think you might have said it was the best piece of advice was not to read the newspapers. I don't think that's great advice as somebody trying to sell newspapers on some level. But any other, I mean, the family is, I mean, it's well talked about, but like you know, Chris, your dad, any good advice come along the way here this summer?
Yeah, you know, they've just said, just be yourself.
Yeah.
Always be yourself, whether it's with the players, with your own staff, you know, with the owner, just be yourself, tell the truth and speak from the heart and be truthful about what you believe and what you want to do. And the other one is, you know, he kind of told me when I first started scouting with Chicago is, you know, have an opinion. Don't really sit on the fence about things. So those are kind of things that I try and do, try and treat people the right way, be honest and upfront with them. And then, you know, when it comes down to the hockey side, it's, do your work, do your research, make sure you're informed and you're watching the video and watching the games. And once you do that, you know, make your opinion and kind of stick with it. And hopefully you make the right decision and it works out, but you don't want to kind of be second guessing yourself all the time, you know, do the work and hopefully it takes care of it. Things take care of itself.
Caught up with Tomas Hertl in Vegas last week. And we hadn't seen him face to face in, you know, a couple of years. I mean, that guy is just, you know, a ray of light, right? He's a ball of energy. Yeah. The dude's unbelievable to talk to. I just wonder what your thoughts are on him as you know, the new deal. Obviously, it was signed before you were there, but he's the centerpiece of the organization moving forward. I thought something interesting he said, and he laughed about it, but I thought there was some truth in it. He kind of came up and he was the young guy on those teams, right? Whether it's behind Pavelski or Thornton, he was, you know, a little brother. And now he's, you know, kind of at the top layer of leadership. He said he never had a chance to be like in the middle. He went from being a young guy to an old guy kind of quickly. So I was just wondering what your thoughts on him were as a player and also kind of transitioning into that next kind of phase of his career. Cause he sounds like he's ready to do it.
Yeah, he's been great. We had some good conversations on the phone before we got here. And then since he's been in town, it's been good to talk to him a little bit. Like you said, he's an upbeat. He's got tons of energy. He's excited. And, you know, as a player, he's the kind of player I think every team's looking for, you know, a big centerman who can play at both ends of the rink, score goals for you, make plays, kill penalties, play in the power play. I mean, he's kind of the ideal center that everyone's looking for. So we're very fortunate to have him. And, you know, he's someone that I can just see he's taken some some steps, it seems, from talking to Joe and the other staff here. You know, he's excited about playing in Prague to start the season, but he's already trying to, you know, put together dinners and activity for the groups, things like that. He's kind of stepping up and kind of leading the way. And, you know, we had some on ice testing the other day, and he was, you know, he was at the front of the line doing that stuff. So I think he's in a good space mentally. He's feeling good about himself and about where he is, not only as a hockey player, but as a person.
Yeah. He sounded thrilled about the Prague experience, right? Like he was going through
his itinerary
for those few days. That's going to be a busy trip for Hurdle, right?
I know. He's got a lot of things he wants to do, and he's got a lot of people. I think he's got close to 50 people coming to the games and stuff like that. So it's, but he's excited for it. And, you know, for a lot of those guys that come over here and play, this is kind of a once in a lifetime experience for him. So I'm excited for him as well. But he's, we're going to have to find out a way to get him some rest to make sure he's ready for the games too.
Well, before we let you go, can we break any news here? There's been a Joe Thornton spot, sightings in San Jose. Come on, let's run it back. Yeah.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything for you on Jumbo right now. He's, I think he's still kind of sorting things out and what he wants to do, and I'll let him lead the way with that and kind of see what he wants to do. I think right now he's enjoying time with his family and being a dad a bit, but he still likes being around the guys. So he's been around the rink here practicing a little bit. And so I don't know what's going to happen with him. He hasn't really, if you know Jumbo, that's just kind of, whereas he's a big kid, he's just kind of winging it a little bit. But, I think at some point he'll let us know what he wants to do. But right now I don't really have anything for you, unfortunately.
Would you be open to a PTO if he wants to?
I'm happy to talk to him about it. I honestly don't know what he's, which way he wants to go or what he's leaning, but he's definitely someone whatever he decides, he's definitely someone I want to have around the organization. Him and Patty, I think they're two iconic players here who have a lot to offer the game, even, whether it's playing or when they're done playing, they're guys I definitely want to have around to help me and be around the organization. So we'll have to see what he decides to do. Like Jumbo, he's always kind of beats to his own drum. So
yes.
We'll see. That's
bad. Yeah.
I mean, the most important question, did you catch the Dolphins game?
Oh, yeah. How much did you watch?
Did you watch the second half?
It was interesting. We had rookie camp. So I saw the first quarter. I was like, oh, this isn't going so well. So, so we had some stuff with that. And I actually came back and saw the fourth quarter and it's like, oh, well, so it was nice. It was nice. Nice win for those guys, especially. I don't think they'd won it. It's been almost, I think, 20 years or something since they've won in Baltimore. And I think those two little wide receivers are something else. So we'll see.
Pretty good. Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks for doing this. And again, congratulations. We're looking forward to see what you build out there. You got some great people you've already brought in. David, I mean, it's been fun to watch what you build already. So best of luck. And thanks again.
No, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Take care. And I'm sure we'll catch up at some point.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Welcome back for the first time. This is the only good segment on the show.
Oh, this is going to be a great one.
It's actually as bad as the other segments on the show this week. Because the break has meant that we have not had any episodes posted. So we don't have questions or comments or...
Maybe a bunch of people posted questions on the last episode back in June or whatever, July.
This is not a joke. I'm sure they did. It just dawned on me. I didn't think to look until just now because I'm stupid. But go back. Please go into the episode page. Mm-hmm. Do our jobs for us. Leave us questions. Leave comments. Lots
of questions for next week because we're like, this is like when the teleprompter goes out. We don't know what to do here without your questions. So please. Although, thankfully, the NHL stepped up with lots of news.
That's it.
A million defensemen retired. Nathan MacKinnon. Let's start there, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan MacKinnon signs a contract that makes him the highest paid player.
This is like the Nathan MacKinnon hour. This all happened after we recorded the first segment. We do love Nathan MacKinnon. I remembered another funny quote from the media availability. Like, we were busting his chops for being, because, I mean, look, it's a standard question for however long he's been signed to that last deal. But it's like, oh, yeah, you're the most underpaid guy in the league. And he was like, yeah, it's not what you want. That's not the title that I'm looking for. But then I asked him if Makar took the belt, and MacKinnon said that he has it now, and he chirps him about players who make more than him, which he didn't say any names. I wish
he's sitting there going, oh, by the way, so and so makes more than you.
Yeah, no, that's and he's like, I'm not going to name any names, but like I feel like Jacob Trouba was in the back. In the back with his ear with his ears burning, right? Makar is now the most underpaid player in the league. I mean, MacKinnon, it's so funny, man. That's a huge number for him, right? Like 12.6 a year for 8 years is a ton. He's making more than McDavid now, but it still just seems hockey player salaries are low. They still seem low, and I'm always glad to see like if someone. Whatever errs on the player side of things a lot of the time. I'm glad to see the bar raised because it seems like, I don't know, right? Like that's this loop that we're stuck in here where nobody could make more than Ovechkin or Crosby. And now nobody could make more than McDavid for the last however many years. And it's good to see MacKinnon kind of break out of that mindset, especially after he left. They don't win a cup without him. Without him at that number, I guarantee it. So he's getting paid on the back end now. I'm happy to see it because again, Nathan MacKinnon is my best friend, as we established as of last week.
About that.
Yeah.
So Cale Makar signs a contract. It was only last summer. It pays him $9 million annually through 2026-27. Look, he may be underpaid, I guess, but
he is.
Do we think that's the best contract in hockey then? I mean, he's a tier 1A or whatever you've declared him.
Oh God, it's tough because you know what goes into these calculations. I can't say that based on Dom's model in terms of market value. I mean, it's Makar, and I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, I don't have the number in front of me, but he's outstripped. Like last season alone, he outstripped that extension by $5-7 million. It's a tough conversation to have though, because conceptually it's tough to wrap your head around a guy who makes $10 million or $9 million and change being underpaid. Like that doesn't jive.
No, it's not that hard. It's not that hard.
It's easy for you because you're a genius, much smarter than me.
No, I'm just saying, like. It's not hard to sit here and say Connor McDavid's underpaid. Like it's easier to say so, you know.
But like, do you just
also,
go
in terms? How about Nathan MacKinnon? How long until he's underpaid? Like 20 minutes?
Yeah. Did we eat lunch yet? I don't know. It's around that point. I guess what I'm saying is like, do we go by just straight value? Like, do we say like Cale Makar outperformed his deal by $7 million, or do we say that player X outperformed it by 60%. Like, how do you define value? Is it just straight millions, or is it percent of the original salary? And this might—it's not interesting at all, right? I don't know that it's that interesting of a discussion. It's only interesting
keep talking about it. Then
it's only interesting when we talk about the top end guys, because it is crazy. That is like the main NHL market efficiency, is that star players don't get paid enough money. That's it. But it's something that applies to every team.
It's an NHL because thing, too. Like, what because other sport is like, it let's doesn't... squeeze the superstars so we can pay the
It's you because know, these guys
the backup offensive linemen. That doesn't...
They're on this run of having top-end players, and it's not a coincidence that the best, highest profile, highest paid hockey players are leaving money on the table to a ridiculous extent. That's bad news for the rest of the league. Do you have Sidney right. Crosby saying, like, I'm a weirdo who wants to have my value set at $8.7 million cap hit. And then the end result is like, okay, Sidney Crosby only makes $8.7 million. So tough nuggets, you know, whatever. Whoever else was signing deals back after the lockout. That was the de facto cap on individual salaries. And I don't want to make it sound like this is like some undeserved thing from McKinnon, because it's not. But the fact that he is a step or two below McDavid and is now making more money than him, that's a big deal. That's an important thing. And it's also setting the bar not for nothing for Austin Matthews, who is a year out from being able to, you know, negotiate a contract extension of his own. Because that ball's rolling. I saw Jonas wrote it yesterday.
Ugh.
Like, it's time to start talking about Austin Matthews. Or no, you know what? Actually, I take that back. It was CJ. It was Chris Johnson. He wrote in the last few days, it's time to start talking about Austin Matthews' next contract. And that's where we are. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, the thing that happened today with McKinnon is going to loom large with. How much does Austin Matthews make now?
I'm not privy to any of those conversations, but I'm guessing Austin is not going to do anybody any favors.
No. Nor should he.
No, I mean, he's like, he won't.
Definitely not the Maple Leafs.
Certainly not the Maple Leafs.
maybe the Coyotes.
All right. Here, I want to have a quick draft with you before the end of this episode. And it's a three-player draft. And you get to pick Zdeno Chara at the peak of his powers, P.K. Subban at the peak of his powers.
Oh, my God.
And Keith Yandel at 1.5% of the peak of his powers.
We're doing the handicap for Yandel?
We're
going to
do a Yandel multiplier. Because I love Keith Yandel, but I mean,
Arizona Keith Yandel is one of the great underrated players of our great underrated slash underpaid players of our era here, I think.
Remember when the Rangers got him and then they got him at half off? Yeah. And then it didn't work?
It didn't work.
I love that trade for the Rangers.
Everything about it seemed like... That was when I feel like we hung on to for a while. I was like, yeah. Maybe this is going to slide into place here. And it didn't. And it didn't happen. 1.5.
So you get to pick one of those guys to anchor your D.
Well, PK's
at 1.5.
There were kind of PK's a funny deal too. Like, there were kind of whispers around Vegas that maybe he was done, and then, you know, whatever. We're four days out, and that comes to pass. It's a bizarre career. He was winning Norris's at 28. Probably could have won two. By 30, he's a backbencher pretty much, and now at 32, he's probably to some extent done by his own choice, but just a bizarre run.
It really was. Who won the Weber for Subban trade?
Oh man. Is it, I mean, at least Vegas turned it into cap relief. Eventually.
Montreal eventually turned it
into cap relief. I think you got to take Chara.
I think it's peak Chara, yeah.
Peak Chara was just... So what is the question? You get one game of these guys at
it's not that well thought out. Yeah, you're trying to win a Stanley Cup game 7, and you get one of them at the peak of their powers.
It's Chara.
It's Chara.
Because he did it.
He was so good and intimidating.
I was having a conversation with a media buddy, Adi Joseph, who helps run CBS Sports, and he's not a hockey guy, but he was just asking like to kind of stratify those guys, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Chara it's an overused term, but the dude is a unicorn just based on his body type, based on the way his career started, based on some of the fitness principles that he brought to the league and strength.
Bike to work every day.
All that stuff. Bike to work. I saw someone say that after a cup party, the first thing he did was like send a cab bill into the team and try to get it reimbursed. I think that's the kind of guy we're dealing with here.
That's great.
Every base covered. That's how you play in the league for 100 years, is you always try to do stuff like filing expense reports promptly on cab trips. I mean, it's him, right? Because like they don't.
It's not. Don't. The correct answer was Keith Yandel at 1.5 because he's American, Sean.
Also,
this was a test. First episode back, and you failed it.
I was hanging out with too many Canadian people last week.
Gross.
I think the question is like, who's the worst player that you could put at 1.5% and still come out on top there? Because I think by nature, like that's
like
just
an NHL like top pair.
It's based
and
then
on multiply.
Based on biology alone, like one and a half of an elite player is going to be better than another elite player. Is Mackenzie Weegar at 1.5 better than Peak Zdeno Chara? I think so.
I think we should start messing with Dom's, like just start adding multipliers into Dom's model and just to see how to whack things that it creates.
I've started just asking for comps for random players. Just he thinks that I'm like working on something, but I'm not actually.
You just want comps.
I'm like, I asked him for we're doing season previews. I asked him for a Cole Sillinger comp yesterday. Didn't even bother using any of it.
It takes him 2 seconds to put all that together, though. He's got it all.
Yeah, but if you ask him like 6 times or 8 times over the course of an afternoon, it evens out.
Well, Sean, it was good to see you. I don't think we need to drag out segment 3 any more than we already have. Unless you have further thoughts on...
Wait, I mean...
Oh, you're ready? You want to tack on another 20 minutes?
No, I just want to ask you, like, as a guy who was around for peak Chara in a way that I wasn't, because you were covering those teams and, you know, pretty closely in 2011 and whenever else, like, is there a takeaway for you? I think this might be the most serious question I've ever asked you on
Chara's career or his impact. Or?
I don't know. Do you have like? Is there like a weird moment that you have with him? Because you were on the ice in Boston and all that stuff. Like,
no, you know, the thing about Chara was he was pretty like reserved. Like PK was way more fun to deal with. I have more memories of even whatever that year was where they went toe to toe in the playoffs and it was awesome and people were like. It like going out of their minds and somebody like spit on, I don't remember. There's all these, or the water bottles, or there was all these controversy and PK was just in the middle of it, loving it. Like just wanted to get he loved playing the heel and that was great. Like for what we were doing, like Chara, like they couldn't have been more different. Chara was so serious and so focused and PK was like, I'm going to shut that crowd up and we're going to have a great time. And I loved that. Like I loved covering PK. So, of the three, the one I probably have the biggest memory of was
Keith Yandel.
He was Yandel because, I remember him being in the trade conversation so much in Arizona. And I don't think he wanted to be traded. Like it was just difficult on him. And I just remember somehow I just got sent city to city, like kept dealing with him. And he was just, it was you could just tell the anguish was hard, you know? And it really seemed like a personal thing. Like you're going from just speculating about somebody's future and Yandel might get traded. And then I would see how, like, he was pretty like open about how, you know, it's a tough process. And I just remember like connecting with that and just being like, oh yeah, this is hard for people that are dealing with this stuff. All three great players, especially at 1.5, Yandel was a great player.
You know, part of PK's legacy really is that he annoyed Crosby.
Yeah.
He annoyed Sid so much. It happened during the Cup Finals with the mouthwash thing. You remember that?
Yeah, the mouthwash.
Sid wasn't thrilled to be getting asked those questions, let me tell you.
No. So, that's fun.
Whatever.
Well, I'll miss having Pete. He's going to move into TV and do a good job. Yeah.
I think we're all going to give more than enough PK in our lives over the next couple of years.
Do whatever he wants, and that's good. I'm just sad that these players are all retiring. You talked about Tommy Wingles being on the staff, making you feel.
Oh old. My God!
This announcement today. I'm like,
that was part of. I think that was fresh on my mind whenever we asked Mike about that, right? Because we talked about it earlier today. Like, Jesus, like all these guys are retiring. And it's making us feel really old. And you hear that Lucas Pisa is a player development guy for the Sharks. Like, God Almighty!
I know. We're old, Sean.
This is a downbeat note to leave on. This is why we need the comments. I know. It teases us up for jokes.
Hey, this will make you feel good. Guess where I went to lunch the other day to meet Brendan Quinn, one of our great writers. It was a nice halfway point between my home and his place, Ferndale, Michigan.
Could it be Tipsy McStaggers?
It was Tipsy McStaggers. He goes, hey, where do you want to meet? I'm like, oh, there's this place in Warren, Michigan called Tipsy McStaggers. And he's like, subtle. I'm like, pretty subtle. Yeah. Subtle. So the waitress comes over and she's like, take my order. I get a Cobb salad because I'm, fat. That's my attempt to not be
healthy.
And she goes, do you want pita with that?
It's got corn in it.
It does. Yeah, that's right. It's healthy.
Does it?
I don't know. I think eggs.
Oh, corn kernels. So
she goes, do you want pita bread? And I'm like, no, I just come from my doctor. He said, I got to lay off the carbs. She goes, hey. I'm like, yeah. She goes, your doctor's an asshole.
Tipsy McStaggers
waitress. I'm like, yeah. I mean, he's just looking out for me, but thank you. So then I'm like, well, I can't get ranch. And this became a thing, this whole discussion with her. She was great, by the way. She's the waitress you would expect at Tipsy McStaggers.
Yeah, she was Mrs. McStaggers. She was Mrs.
McStaggers, or the daughter of, or whatever. She goes, I go, I can't get ranch. I'm like, I don't know. Should I just go vinegar and oil? And she's like, hold on. I bring my own salad dressing for my lunch. And she brings out it was like garlic expressions or something. She's like, it's really good. It tastes great and it's not too bad for you. And she gave me like her personal stash of salad dressing.
Did she was she wearing an overcoat that she opened up and like the lining of it had little bottles of salad dressing up and down them? That's what I imagine. You're buying black market salad dressing.
I mean, it could have been anything. I was very trusting. I just poured it all over that. And she's like, here, to try this concoction I brought from home.
The Americans meme or whatever running joke that came up was last week when me and Russo were in Vegas talking to Bill Daly, which I believe the interview will be running during Wednesday's show.
Why?
Good. I don't know. Good. Good as always. Why are we talking to Bill Daly? I don't know.
No, why is it running not on this show?
Russo calls the shots, man. You know this.
That's true.
My man writes his own number.
He does.
And he also had the recording equipment. I think that's the main thing.
You couldn't get like a 5-minute clip for this
episode. So, all right. I'm going to, paraphrasing this, we asked him about something. I think it was the critical dates calendar, right? Where it's like you need certain dates set on the NHL calendar over the course of the next year. They haven't released some of it. It's a very media-centric, up-your-ass kind of question. Russo asks it, and Bill says, like, in the microphone, like, well, I think I owe one of your coworkers an email back about that one, about the critical days calendar. He's, of course, talking about Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
Russo brings up Pierre. Daly gets in, like, a nice little cottage season, disappearing for a couple months joke. And I'm holding, and me and Russo are like passing a microphone back and forth. And I grab the microphone on impulse, on reflex. As soon as Bill brought up Pierre's cottage, I grab the mic to say into it 1-1-2-2 Boogie Woogie Avenue. And I had to stop myself.
Oh, you didn't do it?
I just had like, Bill wouldn't have gotten it. Russo wouldn't have gotten it.
Okay, Bill would have been like, he would have been like, Bill knows. I thought you were going to say Bill Daly with 1-1-2-2 Boogie.
I would have known. But
we would have, yeah.
I mean, we only had 15 minutes with the vice commissioner. This is what Bill Daly's title should be. It's what it should be.
Vice commission.
15 minutes with Bill. You don't just get 15 minutes with Bill Daly, bro. We couldn't waste 10 seconds of that on my 1-1-2-2 Boogie Woogie Avenue joke.
Sure you could. I would have led with that.
Next time.
This is a good time to plug the Wednesday show. That is the Wednesday Roundtable. You got Mike Russo, Jesse Granger, Joe Smith. Bill Daly is going to join in an interview with Mike Russo and somebody else who was part of that interview. Make sure you tune into that.
I think I asked two questions. Russo was holding the mic. I think I asked about jerseys or something.
Did you have to wrestle it out of his hand to get a question?
Yes. Bill was holding one microphone. Mike was holding the other one. And I just was sort of like leaning in like Steven Van Zandt going back to back on the microphone with Bruce Springsteen. It tied a bunch of scarves around it.
Also, you know the drill. Follow us on Athletic Audio Plus and Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content. I don't think we're this week. I hope we're not, but we will be one of these weeks. And you can start with a 30-day free trial. Then it's 99 cents a month after that. That's Apple Podcasts, the Athletic Audio Plus. And right now only, you can get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you go athletic. Go to athletic.com/hockeyshow. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, good news from producer Jeff. We are not the bonus episode this week. So we're back for another season, and Jeff is back to cutting up our food for us, baby. Spoon feed it.
Welcome back, man. Good to be back.